This episode is presented by Irving Bottle and the Brooklyn Kitchen.
This week, it's the season finale of Meat and Three. We're following up our episode about youth with a look at age and how aging affects life on farms and in kitchens.
At the most basic level, we need people to grow food for a growing global population.
The question of planning for retirement or old age as a cook, it's almost one that doesn't exist bizarrely until it's too late.
We also have a story about a food that might be older than you think.
A recent archaeological finding might have CrossFitters everywhere reevaluating their diets.
Plus, a story about one of Atlanta's most historic and risque landmarks.
There are dancers that have been there 20 and 30 years.
Don't miss our season finale of Meat and Three, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Souther.
Hey, buddy.
What's up, man?
We're back.
We're back.
We are back. We were away.
We were away.
We were away twice in 2 weeks.
True, man.
Yeah, we went to Cleveland.
We went to Cleveland, Ohio.
You know what Tennessee Williams said about Cleveland?
You told the audience last week.
I'm going to tell him again.
Tell him again.
Tennessee Williams said, in America, there are three cities, New York, New Orleans, and San Francisco. All the rest is Cleveland.
You know, Cleveland was awesome. I had a great time there. We had a very gracious host.
And hosts.
Hosts.
The Wazes.
Yeah.
Stefan and Anne-Marie Waz. Amazing. From the Porco Lounge.
Porco Lounge. That was great, man. We got to go down and hang out with a bunch of great people in that city.
They toured us around and showed us the whole industry.
Will Hollingsworth from Spotted Owl.
Yep. Will.
The Spotted Will.
Paulius from the Velvet Tango Room.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Adam Lambert from Ohio City Provisions.
Which was like the first thing that we did when we got there.
The dude rolled us pasta to order and made us agnolotti with mushrooms and peaches, which was an odd but strikingly delicious combination.
It was really cool, and it wasn't the last time I had mushrooms in that city. But also, he made a Fernet Branca sausage.
A salami, yeah, with Fernet Branca.
Dude, and that town runs on Fernet Branca.
It's unbelievable. Like, it's, you know, it's all fueled by the passion of the Porco Lounge. Those guys really stand behind Fernet Branca.
Really cool. We got to grab a lot of interviews with...
we took our remote equipment.
Yep, from Heritage Radio Network. And we got a lot of audio that we're going to edit down into an episode with. And
was I supposed to put batteries in that thing?
Don't...
I know
what
you
is
had
this Tales of the Cocktail 2012?
Yeah, I know you had that happen before.
Oh, man.
So yeah, what a great time. We got a ton of audio. We're going to have cut together a nice pre-recorded show that we'll blast out to the podcast.
Strangely
soon.
Enough, that was our first time to go on a trip together, like for the express purpose of like actually going on a trip together.
Yeah, we've been places at the same time, but we traveled together. Same plane, stayed in the same place.
And we were on our flight back. Yesterday?
That was yesterday. Whew, long day.
And I was like, hey, man, what are you doing after the flight? Do you want to, like, grab a beer or something? You're like, nope, I'm opening up a new bar tonight.
That's right. I opened up Windmill last night. It's probably why I sound pretty rough today.
I blame it on the bar.
Windmill with my partner, Pierre Moulin, and Luke, and Bourjou, and, of course, Max is in the mix as well. It's our new sort of Franco bar down in the Lower East Side. A small menu of snacks and bites that are French-inspired, and a cocktail menu that is French-informed as well. So lots of cognac, armagnac.
Pinot de Chiron.
Yeah,
it's my favorite.
Calvados. We got Perrier behind the bar. We're Frenching it up. But it's a charming little space, and we're kind of in a... You know, that time where it's like, okay, we cracked it open last night, but we're not opening tonight. We got to, do some corrections. Yeah. Get some training. We'll be probably, I'd say, maybe 60% throttle for the weekend. And then hopefully as we move into next week, we'll be 100% go at the Windmill.
Cool. Right on. Yeah, that's on...
Clinton, between Rivington and Stanton, just a few blocks away from one of my favorite restaurants, which Pierre owns, La French Diner. If you speak any French at all, you know that means the French Diner. Lots of stuff going on in the Lower East Side.
Yeah, that's very cool. Congratulations. I got to stop by last night.
Yeah, you did. Thanks for coming.
I had a beer and, you know, got to check out the space. Really cool.
Right. It's comfortable. It's nice. It's it's an atmosphere of conviviality and just hanging out and snacking and drinking.
Yeah, man. It's
gonna
great stuff.
It's going to be great.
Speaking of Cleveland, Ohio.
Back to Cleveland. Speaking of Cleveland,
our guest.
Yeah,
today.
Our guest in the studio is a native son of Cleveland, though he's embarrassed to admit it. It's true. Freddie Sarkis of Liquor Lab. He's the CCO, the Chief Cocktail Officer of Liquor Lab. Hey, Freddie.
Hi, guys. Welcome. What's going on?
Not too much. Welcome.
Thanks for the Cleveland shout out.
And, you know, any opportunity to embarrass our guests.
Nah, it's okay.
That's the way we run the show.
I've been accused of being from Canada, from Pittsburgh, Cleveland sometimes.
You look like you're from Canada.
I grew up there.
Yeah.
Southern Ontario, yeah, just on the other side of Niagara Falls.
Yeah, you look like you're built for some cold weather. Big bushy beard. You're ready to go. Freddie, what's going on, man? Talk to us about...
What do you do?
What do you do?
Professionally?
I'm just going to sit over here and finish this beer. You guys just chit-chat.
Right. I make drinks. I don't know if that's a thing you guys are used to.
Never heard of
people on here talk about.
Well, we talk about that a lot, yeah.
Yeah. And so lately, I've returned to New York, which is where I kind of cut my teeth in the beverage industry, though not in alcohol originally with coffee.
Yeah, you were a coffee guy.
Yeah. I mean, I still am a coffee guy, just I don't work in it professionally as much anymore. And then to open up Liquor Lab with some really cool partners. We're doing some great stuff. It's a lot of fun. Owen Myers, our CEO and founder, he brought me on to direct the beverage, the chief cocktail officer. We teach consumer-facing liquor classes, or cocktail classes is probably a better way to put that.
So it's like predominantly consumer-facing.
Totally, right?
Yeah, I mean, we do have, we're building out a little industry-focused thing we do on Mondays, mostly just to allow people to get a chance to come play around with some of the cool tools that we have, pour out some spirits, do some fun stuff that you don't get to do as much behind bars these days, unless it's your bar, right? If it's not your program. These days, it seems to be a little less likely, a little harder for people who are in that second step, like your bar backs, servers who want to jump behind the bar, or people who only have like one shift a week. I remember when we started out, I think maybe we just didn't know any better. We'd jump behind a bar and just grab a copy of Savoy, break it open, and make 30 drinks over the course of a night. Now, I don't know a lot of bars that really kind of permit that sort of behavior.
Grand Army. Dude, so like... When you have these consumer face, so before the show, we actually, Souther had kind of mentioned something about a video that he had posted. I think you said that you posted it on like social media, but like
I posted it today on Facebook.
So I was just
you're talking about a video about me. I'm like, I definitely don't want to see that.
I don't remember being in that.
Nobody wants to see that video.
I was like walking out of the house today on my way here, and actually I saw on my table, the Jeffrey Morgenthaler's latest book, and
Drinking Distilled,
and it's kind of funny. Like, as a professional, someone who, like you said, you crack open a book and you make 30 different cocktails from the Savoy cocktail book, but that's instinctive to you. Like, you can just you read the recipe and you fill in the gaps. And in the Savoy cocktail book, as many of the other classic cocktail books, there are a lot of gaps. They don't throw all the technique and theory back there. You know, with Drinking Distilled, it's it kind of, in a way, even with the bar book, his other book, kind of in a way, I don't want to say dumbs it down, but he definitely dissects it down to here is what a lemon is, and this is a lime, and this is a
consumable. Makes it easy to understand and easy to read.
So for the video that you were talking about earlier,
hilarious.
You were saying that it's called 50 people.
It's Epicurious, which is a foodie thing. I follow foodie stuff, of course. And they have this little video series. They're usually 3 to 4 minute videos, and it's called 50 people .. Right. So this one was 50 people try to juice a lemon.
Yeah.
And it's just a cutting board is there and a bunch of tools laying around and a lemon, and one person at a time, just random average folks walk up and there's a lemon there and they say, juice this lemon. And the hilarity that ensues when these people don't know how to even approach a lemon, it's mind-boggling. And this is what we're up against. It's curious to me, after watching this video and having these people struggle to get 5 drops of lemon juice out of a whole lemon, and they're proud of themselves, yet they maybe get upset at the price of a cocktail. If they think that's the effort that it takes to get a teaspoonful of juice, they should think cocktails should cost $30 each.
Yeah.
No matter where. Cleveland.
Even in Cleveland.
Even in Cleveland. Even in Cleveland.
I was going to say I disagree with your initial statement that's instinctive to open up the book and fill in the gaps.
It's, for bartenders, it
is. No. But that's my point. It's not instinctive for bartenders to start. It becomes instinctive over time.
Well, that's what,
as with everything.
No,
yeah.
I'm saying. We're trying. That's what we're doing. Is we're trying to build a program to fill the gaps to take those people that aren't quite there yet.
No, I would disagree with myself as well. But like what I'm saying is like as a professional, like
how do you disagree with yourself?
Well, no, I'm just saying. I mean, all the time, basically. Yeah, it's real easy if you're me.
That makes perfect sense.
But no, the thing is, like, as a bartender, like, you, or a chef, like, when you read, like, a recipe in a cookbook, it's like, you know, you're like, all right, cool. An ounce of lemon juice, for instance.
Yeah. It doesn't.
But you already knew how to, like,
it doesn't say how to get it. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't say how to get it.
How do you, yeah. Well, believe me,
when I taught at the culinary school, you'd be making some doughs that involve ice cold water, and the recipe would say literally the words, 1 cup of ice water. And you'd watch these students go get a cup measure and fill it with ice and water.
Yeah.
And then try and work that into a dough. I'm like, no, that's not. You can ice the water and then strain the ice out, and now you've got ice cold water.
I remember working in a kitchen and looking for orange juice for something very early on in my career and asking the chef, like, where's the orange juice?
Yeah, we keep it inside the oranges.
It's in the oranges, chef.
It's in the oranges.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but that's the thing. It's like there's a difference in the skill level for what we do and what the home bartender does, right? So, like, the consumer facing classes that you teach.
Yeah, so that's very much, we do a very basic, like, we even teach people, like, this is how to shake. Hold the shaker this way. Don't hold it like this. Don't shake like this. Right. You'll look stupid. Shake like this. Like,
well, there's the you'll look stupid, but there's also the you won't get the job done.
But they don't care. They care much more that they look stupid than the drink won't be great.
Right, because they're in a
really?
Room.
Really?
100%.
Wow.
Because they're in a room. Oh, yeah, I get it, man.
Because they're hosting to their friends
exactly.
And stuff like
sure.
That. I get it.
They don't want to look foolish.
Right, so you find...
It's the same thing you get when you understand this. When we put a drink on the menu or a food item on the menu that's foreign or difficult to pronounce, no one fucking orders it. Because they don't want to try and say the thing in front of their friends or even to the server. They don't want to be corrected. They point it. They pick it up and point the menu. I'll have this one. The second one on the menu. Yeah, the Di Pompelmo? Sure. Right? That's been a drink on my menu for 5 years. No one can pronounce it. They say the second one, the grapefruity one, the one with tequila. They never say the name.
That's why every time I'm in New Orleans, I just stay far away from Chapultepec. I avoid that street.
But you just said it perfectly.
Well, that's because I've been there a bunch. Anyway, I'm joking. Come on.
I got you.
He's disagreeing with himself.
Oh, yeah.
I'm disagreeing with myself.
Let's talk it over at Grasshopper at Two Jacks.
Yeah.
So you're dealing with like a completely raw, and it's usually about 50 people in the room, right? You've got a great setup. I've been over there. Sort of amphitheater cocktail or amphitheater cooking class was what it looks like.
That's
with all
what
these
it was
shiny
designed
tables
after.
And yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah.
And there's like a setup for every student.
Yep. Oh man, it's crazy. Like everything necessary for each class is on the table for the students. It's pretty radical.
There's little things we do. Like we make every table share a jigger. That way you have to communicate with the person next to you. It gives us a chance to put in a couple jokes. It also slows down the pace of the class a little bit. And it's sort of because we're positioned in a place where we work really well as far as like date night or team building, corporate events,
bachelorette
parties.
Oh yeah, I can see that for sure.
So giving people a reason to kind of chat with each other and see what the person to the right is doing, or left as it were, rather than just kind of speed through their cocktail and stare up at me and wait for the next instruction. Which I always joke. We always get a couple star students, people who just get it or have made drinks before, right. Who just not like, got it, quarter ounce of what's next. And the person next to them is like, I'm confused. Why is the jigger not working? I'm like, you're holding it up. You're holding it upside down.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it doesn't. The strainer doesn't work if you wear it like a hat. It needs to.
Right.
I've learned over the first couple classes, we're like, oh, wow. The amount of stuff that you're not wrong that we take for granted, like
we take a lot
how
of
to
stuff
get
for
juice
for sure.
Out of a lemon.
For sure.
That might be my next thing, is start everyone out with a lemon.
You know, I encourage you.
One lemon on a table for like each group of four.
Exactly.
And everyone's just kind of like staring at it with their...
Just juicing by committee.
Sure. I encourage you to go watch this video I posted. You, the listener, as well. This video, it's stunning. It's really shocking at how several of them walk right up to it and they picked up the lemon and they look right to the camera and they say, you know, I've never juiced a lemon, which then I interpret to mean you've just never juiced citrus ever. Not of any kind. It's okay, because if you said to yourself, well, I've juiced an orange but not a lemon, then you're still in the right park, right?
Right,
but these people look at it like it's a foreign object from a distant land.
The slap chop is my favorite.
There's a guy who tries to juice a lemon in a slap chop, and if you don't know what that is, please go watch the video.
So to me, that also kind of... I'm kind of disappointed by that video, like by humanity from that video.
A little bit, you know, but you don't, because, you no, don't but know what you don't know.
No,
I get
but
it.
The thing is, no, this is fucked up, because if you don't know how to juice a lemon, or any citrus for that matter, then that means that you probably don't know how to cook food in general. You know what I mean?
So yeah, that means, you're not intuitive.
And you need food to survive. So yeah. If you don't fucking know how to juice citrus, like, well, it doesn't matter if it's for a cocktail or for food.
As far as cooking goes, I make the best reservations on the planet.
Yeah, kind of. I get that. I get both of those statements.
Got a lot of people on my phone that I can text. And
I also feel like I think maybe what you're alluding to also is that there's this notion of like being, as Jeffrey mentions many times in his book, sort of being an adult. How have you gotten to adulthood and you don't know how to juice a lemon?
Yeah.
Like there's the videos are great. They're like 50 people make vinaigrette and people are just dumbfounded of this thing that has three ingredients, you know? Like they're just out of their depth.
But like making vinaigrette's like way different than juicing a lemon.
Sure,
I think.
But you know,
like there's
might
a book.
Juice a lemon to make a decent vinaigrette.
There we go.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so like
but there's
I
a
think
book.
It's like rules of gentlemanliness. You should know how to pop a cork on a champagne bottle. You should know how to
there's a book that
shave your face with a razor.
Easy.
Sure. but don't tell me anything about that. I don't want to know.
Gonna say you got the wrong
I'd rather
crowd.
Not know.
But you know how. The both of you know
but,
how.
But there's a book that was in the very first bar that I ever bartended in. And it was 30 things to know how to do before you turn 30. And one of them was how to properly light a fire, like
a
campfire.
Those are things you should
one
know.
One of them was like how to fold a fitted sheet.
Yes.
You know?
I agree with that.
And if I recall...
Like how to change a tire.
It's like, yeah.
There should be things you just kind of know.
A fucking lemon, man.
And I was going to say perfect specs for a white lady is something that's in that book, too.
It was like totally like kind of random, but I was like, I agreed with it. But
yeah, that's just
no, actually, I think one of the things was like how to make a Bloody Mary. I'm not joking. I think that was actually in the book, but it's been almost two decades since I've seen that book.
Sure.
Anyway.
For me, I'm flabbergasted by the number of adults that don't know how to tie a tie, or can only do like the whatever it is, the four in hand, the really basic tie.
Yeah.
And that's it. Or
single Windsor.
Sure. Yeah. Whatever it's called.
Whatever you want to call it. But no,
we're kind of getting off on a weird tangent, but yeah, I like it.
But I like it too.
At the end of the day, we all kind of agree, just get off our lawn.
Get off my lawn. Yes. Slow down.
Angry radio station shakes fist at clouds. New meme.
But so like that is a lot of the students that you have, right? You're kind of like taking it down to basics. Like
these guys have not even close to making an omelet. They haven't even cracked an egg, right? They're at the beginning.
It's a really fun group. It's a mix because we definitely get people who are there to learn, and we definitely get people who are just there
to have fun.
It's an activity. It's like a paint and sip night, except with cocktails, and then they get to Instagram it afterwards. And then there's a good mix. We get people who've come to several classes, and they're really fun because they're excited about what they're going to do this time.
Yeah.
But even when you're going through the basics and stuff.
Continued education.
Yeah. It's fun. It's that, I hate the word, but it's kind of cute, is edutainment.
Sure, of course. Yeah. I totally get that. I mean, I hold classes at Amore Margo from time to time by reservation only, and it's the same thing. I'll have a class of 15 people, and seven of them are there to like take notes and learn about Amaro, and seven of them are there to get liquored up with their buddies.
Yeah.
And have a great time. And it always works. It totally works.
That's what we do every week.
That's my favorite thing.
On that note, we're about halfway through the show. Let's take a quick break, and we will be right back. And I want to talk more about this because I know that you brought something for us to try. Also, I want to talk about like what the cocktails are that you put in this class. Like,
yeah, sure.
Let's get a deep dive into Liquor Lab with Freddie Sarkis when we come back.
Yeah. This episode is presented by Irving Bottle, an approachable and affordable wine and liquor shop in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Irving Bottle focuses on natural wines and high-quality spirits that are delicious, unconventional, and a good value. Ask about their weekly Wednesday tastings, 10% case discounts, in-store pickup, and free local delivery. Visit them online at irvingbottle.com. This episode is also presented by the Brooklyn Kitchen, a recreational cooking school on a mission to change the world by teaching people how to cook like grown-ups. With two locations in Williamsburg and Sunset Park's Industry City, the Brooklyn Kitchen hosts a range of public and private cooking classes, corporate team parties, pop-up dinners, tasting events, and local rentals for film and video shoots. Learn more at thebrooklynkitchen.com.
Are back. You're listening to the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. Today we have Freddie Sarkis, the Chief Cocktail Officer,
CCO,
at
nailed it
at Liquor Lab.
Then we get a hat that says that.
Yeah, yeah. Just fucking CCO, man. It's awesome, it dude. Awesome. So we were talking about. Well, we talked for about 15 minutes about lemons in the first half of the show, but I'm gonna
crack open this mason jar. What's in here? You guys keep talking.
Well, so we were talking about the Liquor Lab and what you do. You're teaching like cocktail classes to kind of like more like entry level people. Then like some people come back and you've got like they start advancing and they get really excited about it. We talked about like a little bit about like just, like the technical side of like, you know, juicing a lemon or making like cutting a peel or like jiggering, shaking, stirring. What are the examples of the cocktails that you throw in the mix to get people started?
Sure. So our most sorry.
Also one of them, if it's not too intrusive to like ask this, is one of your main things getting people like to understand the difference of shaking and stirring a martini?
100. Well, I do it with an old fashioned usually. Yeah. Sometimes with a Manhattan, depends. We generally will do.
I do it with a daiquiri.
Oh, that's interesting.
You give someone a stirred daiquiri and versus a shaken one, and with the same ingredients, same amount, same everything, it gets the message across.
I go the other way. People seem to be really into old fashions these days, and a lot of people will come in and say, oh, my favorite drink's an old fashioned. And then I'm like, oh, great. And then we talk about them, and they tell me where they'll order them. Like, oh, we ordered everywhere. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I just did if you see someone shake your old fashioned, order beer. And let me show you why. And then we make our old fashioned in class. And then after we've made it, I shake it for literally two shakes and then re-pour it. And it looks terrible. I have people taste it. They're like, oh, this isn't good. I'm like, well, yeah, that's, I told you. But sometimes it's nice to have an actual proof of, you know.
Yeah. Proof of concept.
Proof of concept.
Sells it every time.
And our most popular class by far is our margarita. Anything with margaritas in it. People love to come. We'll do different variations.
I mean, isn't it still like the number one ordered cocktail in America?
It is.
North America.
Yeah, I was thinking that old fashions might overtake it, but I don't think they have.
I don't think we'll ever get there.
No. We live in a bubble.
Yeah, that's tiny thinking.
Oh, no. I mean, when I travel, when I go to like, you know, when I go to Pittsburgh or if I head down to Texas or wherever, the old fashioned still like is everywhere.
Love it.
Yeah.
I mean, it outsells.
But especially in Texas, the margarita is still reigning, the reigning champ.
Yeah. I wonder if they're counting like some variation of, I feel like if you, the spicy margarita is something people are really into these days.
The margarita, the mezcalrita, I don't know, man. It's too much.
Just lots of hyphenating. But I used to always, that used to be my thing. We don't hyphenate words. A margarita is a thing. It's a cocktail. Well, we'll hyphenate it. It's fine.
You gotta bend to the wheel.
Espresso martini.
Yeah. An espresso margarita.
No, espresso martinis are making a comeback.
Espresso margarita.
Why not? You got that Patron coffee. Get in there.
Yeah, we call it that's actually pretty good. Hold on, wait. That's a cocktail we do. We call it the breakfast margarita. We make a. I
teach they're all for
are
breakfast.
Are you doing a bit right now? Or
nope.
You
think so? But that's my point. You make stuff digestible so people can read it and understand it. Mm-hmm. Is it something I wouldn't print it like that on a cocktail menu, but in this case, it sort of works out. People like it. They know what it is. And coffee and tequila have great flavor synergy.
Shake it with an egg.
Do a flip.
I've got some bacon bitters.
Yeah.
Too
shit's
far.
Getting weird.
We've touched on some of the advanced stuff. We actually have a class we call Next Level Shit. We put a little asterisk
that's
in there.
The name of the class.
That's the name of the class, yeah. Nice. That's our and that's kind of into advanced technique. The problem is the first time we launched it, we just put it on the website, and people were just wanted to come to Liquor Lab classes. So it was like 70%+ or even maybe 90 if I remember it, first time attendees. I was like, oh, this is not
like the jumping right into the next level shit.
Yeah,
you kind of have to have like a setup where it's like
you can't take this till you take that.
Until you take the first one.
Yeah, I'd like to roll out. Graduate. I always say like the 100, 200, and then master class series, so people understand. Just as a precursor, if you come take it, if you'd like, you know, we'll take your money, but just know you'll have a better
experience.
We gladly
accept money from our patrons
if you come to one of our other classes first and get the basics down.
Yeah, what do you think? So like kind of like scrolling back a little bit. The that setup with teaching like kind of like newbies, like entry level people, like how many of the people who come to the class are actually interested in, you know, because we've talked a lot in the past about like people going to bartending school.
Well, right, I'm teaching bar methods later this month.
Right.
Right, which is I teach a class, it's my third year teaching it, and I teach stirring. Stirring.
But that's entirely industry focused. Right?
Entirely industry focused. Well, and that's I'm dealing with people who are 101 level. And when Chris Bidmead asked me to teach the class the first year, I said, how long is the class? And he said, an hour. I said, I have to come up with enough content for an hour to talk about stirring. Clockwise, counterclockwise, left hand, right hand, done. Right? And then I started digging into it, and I started really thinking about the theory behind what I do every damn day. And I reached back out to him, and I said, can I have more time? Yeah. And he said, no, it's an hour. So I teach an hour-long class about stirring.
I teach stirring, and I always make a joke that I teach stirring. It takes about half an hour to get people to practice when I'm consulting and go in and make them start with rice.
What is that?
Oh, it's just sociopathy. It's you start, if you can stir rice, you can stir just about anything. It's the thing they do in Japan, shake and stir with rice, especially because if you make a mistake and
stealing
spill it,
that.
It's a devil to clean up.
Stealing it.
So it forces a little extra focus.
So you fill a yari with rice.
Yeah. No,
three quarters of the way up or whatever.
Just a little bit. Right. Exactly. And it gets you. And then when you're shaking, same thing. You can feel it a lot better than you can feel the ice as you're getting stuff moving in there. So taking all that information and distilling it down. Into a 1 minute spiel, right? So I tell them, I'm like, I'm gonna teach you how to stir. I'm gonna teach you in 30 seconds. Normally we spend a little more time on this, but that's the Liquor Lab method, right? So taking that, having that experience that we have built from behind the bar and finding the most efficient way to transfer it to people in a fun environment where they're gonna retain.
So it sounds to me like, I mean, like obviously like you've got a lot of people who are like kind of like entering into this blind or like they without any previous experience, but you've got a lot of theory behind it to back it up. So like what I was going to ask before is like, how many of the people that take these classes are like, what's the percentage of people who are doing it for advancement to potentially get into the industry?
So that I warn people against, to be honest. I tell them, this is my usual spiel. You wouldn't take a cooking class at Sur La Table, then roll into Danielle and submit your resume.
Right.
The same thing is here. This is for fun. This is to learn some basics. If you have an appetite for more, you can reach out and we'll direct you to where to go and give you books to buy.
Sure. You could point them to Bar Methods or Bar 5 Day or whatever level they might be ready for.
I usually just point them to cocktail bars. I'm like, go to a bar, sit down, observe bartenders.
Right. Engage.
Buy a couple
take
books.
Notes.
Right. But for the most part, I don't think anyone is under the impression that we're giving that level of education that after taking 5 Liquor Lab classes, you're ready to jump behind a bar somewhere.
Right, because you're not selling it that way.
Right. I do think after taking 5 Liquor Lab classes, you can make some pretty amazing drinks at home, entertain some friends, have a little party.
Well, I like what you said about the, like, go to a cocktail bar and sit there and watch, because I think observation is the greatest tool, like, that a lot of people aren't born with the gift of observation, you know? Like, you got to read the fucking room, you know? Like, that's observation also is a key element in the idea of hospitality. Like, if you're not listening, if you're not seeing, then you're failing, you know?
Right.
Like, in hospitality. So, like, same thing. Agreed. Like, when I mean, I certainly, like, when I started bartending, like, when I first started, when I realized that I wanted to bartend, I did that. I went to, I mean, it was Oklahoma City, and it was, like, 15-plus years ago, and there wasn't, like, a lot of, like, cocktail bartending happening. But what I did is I went to all my favorite bars and restaurants, and I would sit there, and I would watch the bartenders and the servers and the host and the managers, and I would see how they, like, ran the room, you know? So, like, there's... Some of that is, I mean, it's good that you tell your students to go do that, you know, go check it out. Like, what do you like about this place? Do you even know? Like, like,
right.
This is my favorite bar. What do you like about it?
Be able to articulate what you're seeing. If you're not able to articulate it, then you're probably not being observant enough.
Right.
Speaking of observant.
Oh, there's a drink in front of us.
Yesterday. A friend of mine in Seattle reminded me that it was Black Tot Day because I was all caught up in the plane flight and opening up Windmill.
Sure.
And I'm glad she did. Jen Aiken from Rumba reminded me that it was Black Tot Day, so I drank some rum yesterday. But on the table, Freddie, you brought us some rum.
I did.
What do we got here?
This is
some Liquor Lab action?
A little bit. I was experimenting with some stuff.
Experimenting in the lab.
Yeah. So what this is pineapple-infused Ray and Nephew. And the goal was to come up with some fun stuff to do for summer rum drinks that people can do at home, and the idea was we soaked pineapples in Ray and Nephew for 24 hours, then took the pineapples out and soaked them in simple syrup for 24 hours, and then pulled the pineapples out from there and cubed them. So you have a candied rum-infused pineapple for garnish. You have a really, I really love this syrup. This basically like a pineapple syrup with these big rum ester kind of notes to it, and then this, of course, the actual pineapple-infused rum.
Summer rummer.
Yeah. Man, this is
not a bummer.
Dangerously delicious.
It is.
It's dangerously delicious. It tastes fresh and spicy at the same time, and it's got some heat on there. That's Ray and Nephew. Rum.
Man, I'm not mad at that. You know, so this is kind of like some of the stuff, like some of the kind of like bartender hacks that you teach at the class, right? Like,
yeah,
it's like, don't overly complicate it. Here's some cool shit that you can do. In an easier way.
Oh yeah, 100%. We try to keep things to a certain, again, a level that where you can do this at home at a party without having to spend half an hour to prep, without having to do a bunch of, have a whole table of ingredients and tools laid out, but some simple basic things.
But that's the thing. That's kind of what kicked off our conversation today before we got on air, and I mentioned that video where these people can't even juice a lemon, and you're like, it's so simple. Just do this with a pineapple, and then do this, and then do this, and then you've got these three things. That seems like, man, if we know this of the average person, then that's not simple to us. You barely explained it, and I'm like, I got it, right?
Sure. So in the class, we'll explain it in a little more detail.
Of course.
Like, make sure to take the skin off the pineapples and remove the core.
First, no, I think it starts with first, this is a pineapple.
This is rum.
You know, you should have them walk in and
SpongeBob lives in one of these
three,
under the sea.
Have just three simple fruits on the table. And one of them's a pineapple, and see which one they pick up. Right? There's an avocado, a dragon fruit, and a pineapple. Please pick up the pineapple.
The one that trips people.
See what happens.
The one that trips people out, and that a lot of them aren't willing to admit it, is passion fruit. It's fun to play with alternate citrus, and passion fruits, while fresh passion fruit's kind of inaccessible, it's very easy to get some high-quality purees. So we use it a lot. And then whenever we start, I go, who loves passion fruit? And everyone puts their hand up. And I'm like, who likes how sweet it is? People keep their hands up. And I'm like, just so you know.
Super tart.
Passion fruit is super tart, a little bitter, right? Yeah. And then we have it in a puree. And I'm like, go ahead, put your spoon in there and taste it. And the looks on people's faces, it's great. But, I mean, the drinks end up being delicious and people are into it. And we're not trying to shame anyone. But on the same hand, yeah, it's to me, I'm always surprised. I'm like, oh, you love this so much? You don't know anything about it.
Yeah, cool. We get that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about, like, this kind of an infusion, and this is pineapple-infused rum is wildly useful and very versatile, right? So you can use it in punches, you can use it in daiquiris. I mean, we're drinking it on its own. It's fucking delicious. But also, to me, like, especially for like some of the students for your classes, like this is something they could do at home, and then they can like they could gift it to like their friends.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and like when we were at Porco Lounge in Cleveland, Stefan, the owner, he has a huge collection of like antique crystal decanters. And was his dad?
His dad was collecting them, yeah.
He was collecting them, and he would buy like the cheap, fucking cheap-ass whiskey. He would buy these decanters for like a buck a piece at estate sales.
Right.
Fill them with like cherries and cinnamon sticks and like cheap-ass fucking whiskey. And then he would gift those to people at like Christmas time.
And it would blow their minds.
And it would blow their fucking minds.
Right. And he put in, you know, some effort, but like total outlay of cash is pretty low.
Yeah.
Right? And he's making this thing that, again, you and I think are simple, but the people he was giving it to were like, mind blown.
Yeah, no, that's great.
How did you do this? You're an alchemist. I know, I just got that text too.
Yeah, I mean, like, but that's the cool thing is, like, I think the real takeaway from, like, from people taking, like, cooking classes and cocktail classes that aren't in the industry is that what they take away from it is, like, when they're at home, I certainly did this when I had my house in Oklahoma City, before I got into the industry, I would have people over and cook and make cocktails for them. I wasn't a professional, but you know what? It was what I wanted to do as a host. So like a lot of people, like when they come to these classes, it's something they can take back and they can entertain their friends.
Absolutely. And then,
and that's what it is, the cocktail party, you know?
And then also, this is something that's always been a passion of mine. I've always said, ever since I started in the bar industry, was getting people to drink better.
Yeah.
Right? Just step outside of the little vodka soda box and try something more interesting. You don't have to like it. You can go back to whatever you had before, but at least try it. And we found that slowly over time, that culture has kind of spread out.
It is. I find it's very interesting how many people are easy targets, willing to try a food they've never had before, to drop $15 on an appetizer of something they don't know a single ingredient in. Yet there's a lot
of hesitation. Also the way you present it.
There's a lot of hesitation for people to spend $15 on a cocktail that they're unfamiliar with. And I'm curious why that's so prevalent.
Well, I think going back to what we said before, it's like at the very base level,
because food's just food. Alcohol is going to make you feel good no matter what.
Yeah, but you need food to survive. You don't need alcohol to survive. True. So, like, there might be some sort of underlying...
I don't know about you, but I need alcohol to survive.
Well, I need it to get through the day.
That's survival, buddy.
But, yeah, so that's the other thing is that kind of that added bonus is that it does tend to make people a little more accepting of stuff. People have said to me, you know, we've all heard this 100 times. Oh, I hate gin, but this is great. Or, you know, I'm not a whiskey drinker, but I really like this. Yeah. And then we encourage them to order those drinks and go out and try stuff. You know, we do a riff on a penicillin for our New York Iconic cocktails menu. And then I always tell people about Attaboy, and we also do a riff on the Gin Mule. Mm-hmm. And we tell them about Pega Club, which is right around the corner from us. And then people tell me after class, oh, we're going there. I'm like, great, that's awesome. So they're going to go somewhere that they haven't been. They're going to order a drink they haven't had before because they had a version of it or something, and it might be a little outside their comfort box. And that makes me really happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
It is fun to move people into a place where they're a little off balance, but then you delight them in some way, and then they find their feet again.
Yeah.
You know what they do? They tell their friends.
Yeah, they do. Yeah,
exactly.
I assume that the overwhelming majority of your classes are run on that fuel.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got 50 people in the room, and then they have a great time, and they go tell one person each that surely you land another class because
of that. Yeah, I mean, without trying to... You know, sound like we're tooting our own horns. I've literally
That's
never
what this
had,
show's about. Toot I've, your horn, Sarkis.
Never had anybody. I've never had anything other than that at liquor. We've never had anybody seem remotely dissatisfied with anything we've done, which is really exciting.
That's a fucking That's a fucking great feeling as a business operator. Like to have a 100% success rate.
It really feels like that. Yeah.
I mean,
it's awesome.
That's great. But they're getting an experience. They're learning something. And they also are still getting the drink.
Oh, right? Yeah, 100%.
Whether it's good or not, they're probably going to feel like it's kind of good because they made it.
And
I'm proud of myself. Look what I did.
That's a big part of it.
Right? I got 4 ounces of tequila and a quarter ounce of lime juice. This is the best margarita ever.
Well, that's every customer.
Because I made it.
Well, not only that, it's like that's the greatest flavor of any dish or cocktail.
Human.
is...
Oh, I thought human was the greatest flavor.
Human.
Yeah. Long pig.
No, the greatest... Long pig. The greatest flavor is... The greatest spice of it is getting what you asked for. You know what I mean? Like, when someone orders a gin gimlet and they're like, I just want a gin gimlet, but I don't want any sugar. I want 2 ounces of lime juice and, like, 4 ounces of gin. And I just want it shaken. Don't double strain it.
Right.
You know, I want it in a wine glass. Not in a coupe.
I want it in an empty SpaghettiOs can.
Yeah.
Mostly clean.
I would like perfume served in a man's hat.
You've seen it. Like, yeah. I mean, I've done it.
Served in a man's hat.
Simpsons reference.
But the, exactly. But the thing is, like, you've had those customers who they're like, if you try to talk them out of it, you're like, that's going to suck. You know, but then they're like, this is what I want.
Like, you've insulted their being. Like, yeah, how dare you? This is, and
you make it for them, and it sucks, but they like it.
They love it.
Because they got what they asked for. And then they say, you know what? Let me try it your way.
Try your way. Exactly. Yeah, let me try one of your house
cocktails. I like yours, too. Yours is good. Next time, I'm just going to order that.
Yeah, this is okay.
Yours is gooder.
outstanding. So... Well, Freddie, talk to us some more about Liquor Lab. How do you get into a class? What do you got to do to make it all happen?
I was going to say, I need to find an excuse to say liquorlaboratory.com like 7 times.
Let's say it. So, that's one.
So if you go to our website, which
liquorlaboratory.com.
Which I can never remember how to spell, so I always say Liquor Laboratory.
Liquorlaboratory.com. Does that help you?
It's a laboratory of love.
Matt chimed in once. We got 5, I think, on board.
We'll get there. So, on there we have our class schedule. You can just click through. We have a second location in Southampton that's running for the summer as well.
Fancy.
Yeah.
Get some Raya. Hampton action.
It's the Hamptons are exactly like you think they would be.
No comment.
Yeah, they're really fun. A lot of sun. As long as the sun's out anyways. It's a lot of fun. It's a really fun area.
Oh, Southampton.
What?
and then we're... on the website, we have a calendar. On the calendar, we have all of our events.
Yeah, all your schedule. So you mentioned that your most popular one is margarita, but what other things do you offer?
So like I said, we've got...
And like in a margarita class, you're not just making a margarita. You're making like some variants and you're teaching...
Four different variants.
There's a thread of how this works, and now you've learned how to make margaritas.
Absolutely. And the menus all kind of are progressive, where it's not, you know, we're trying to be mindful of not putting... Like, don't start the class off with... And then I've heard conflicting theories on this, but I don't like to start the classes off with big, heavy stir drinks and then finish with lighter cocktails. I kind of do it the other way around. I think that's a little better. Things like that kind of progresses.
Sure.
No, that makes sense because, like, if you go big and heavy at the beginning, you might experience palate fatigue. Or
plus, for a lot of our consumers, right? There's that too. Plus, for a lot of consumers, I want them to kind of warm up. To get into their Manhattans, not start with their old fashions and then kind of simmer down after that.
And then teeter off.
Right. Yeah. So we do an iconic New York cocktails class, which I said is 4 drinks I've picked from New York that I think are iconics, 2 modern classics, 2 traditional classics. And then we do, we've got a summer cocktails class right now that I like a lot. We have a Negroni class.
Oh man, I want to do that. I love Negronis.
Yeah. We actually have our first... I don't want to misquote the date, but I think the 18th, we're doing our first brunch coffee class. We're going to get, we have French presses for everyone, so everyone will be pressing their own coffee. We'll be going through a little coffee service first, and then
getting back to your roots, coffee man.
Yeah, for sure.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
And then, I mean, we haven't scheduled it yet, but Damon, I'm going to go teach a class over there.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. Yeah. That'll be the first of our...
About my book.
Yeah, book series.
I'm just here for the drinks, available on Amazon.com.
For pre-order.
For pre-order. It's number 1 under alcohol and spirits and mixed cocktails.
Sure is.
There, see? That's how you plug things, Freddie.
Not awkward at all.
But seriously, I tried to make it extra awkward for you. But seriously, we've talked off the air over the past couple weeks. That's why I went over to check out Liquor Lab. It's a beautiful facility. I'm going to maybe do a class over there that'll involve a copy of my book coming with the class, and we'll do some cocktails out of the book, and we'll talk about how it is I see the world of cocktails. And that'll be like, I guess if you're starting to structure your 101, 201, whatever, that'll be an elective.
Yeah. If you,
right?
If you want off Southern, the rails. Yeah, if you want Southern and I to come on, do a class on how to bore the hell out of your guests.
Yeah, yeah.
We're available for that.
We can certainly do that.
We can come up with all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's the great thing. It's so flexible, right? I'm certain that people approach you and say, hey, those classes you got look great, but my team wants to learn about I don't know.
Absolutely.
We micheladas. Had, can you do a michelada class for us?
Yeah, for sure.
And you'll totally bang that shit
out. We had a really cool request, which I was really happy about. Someone, a law firm, wrote in and was like, we really like martinis. Can we do a martini class? And I was like, sure. And they're like, great. We usually drink gin martinis, whatever. I'm like, oh, yeah, no, okay, that's great. My instinct
you
was with somebody,
vodka, yeah.
When a law firm says, we like martinis. And I'm like, which kind? Apple or peach?
Yeah.
Espresso. But right. Espresso martinis are great. The second time you ride on espresso martinis, like, oh.
Hey, man, Dick Bradzel.
I'm a fan. Yeah. Speaking of which, I think I'm doing a treacle riff for an apple cider class we have coming up.
Cool. Apple cider. Hard cider.
Yep. We're doing with sparkling hard cider made here in New York. Like I said, we do all kinds of fun stuff. Also, outside of the classes that are on the website, we also do a lot of private and corporate events as well, which is kind of takes up the majority of our weekdays. And then the weekends we reserve for public.
Yeah.
Classes.
You have classes on Thursday, Friday, Saturday every week?
And Sunday? Unless there's a book out or something. Yeah, it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Sundays we leave for recovering from our hangovers.
Sure. Yeah, well, meet me at Bar Goto.
It's one of my favorites.
I'm there every Sunday. I call it church.
Nice.
If I'm in town and not working, I'm at Bar Goto.
Yeah, man.
The only bar I can recommend people celery. Go to and eat celery.
Yeah.
The best bar
people
snack.
Are like, what are you talking about?
I used to
get the celery.
I used to say I thought the celery was the best bar snack in New York. I edited that to say, I think it's the best bar snack I've ever had. Like, it is.
Yeah.
It meets all the requirements for a bar snack. With one glaring omission, but that's the omission you want it to have, right? It's crunchy, it's savory, it's salty, it's juicy, it's not fried.
Not fried.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. It's this great raw set. You have to go there to get it.
Yeah.
I can't.
Also, don't pass on the okonomiyaki.
Okonomiyaki.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Freddie Sarkis.
Let's go there after this.
I'm in.
I got to go to work.
I don't.
Whatever.
All I do is work.
I don't work. I do radio.
Damon is a man of leisure.
I talk about work, but I don't do a lot of it.
That's not true at all. You do quite a lot of work. So Freddie Sarkis, liquorlaboratory.com. You got any other things you want to plug? You got an Instagram or anything like that?
Yeah, my Instagram is Freddie Sarkis 23. It's with an IE, like Freddie Mercury.
Oh my God, are you excited for that movie?
Very.
I saw the trailer last week right before we went off to Cleveland. Oh my gosh, I'm a big fan of Queen. I'm so excited for the movie.
Yeah.
Let's all get a flask and go see that movie when it comes out.
I'm in.
Heck yeah. Of pineapple rum.
Ooh.
I can
keep yourself alive.
That. Man. They call me Mr. Cool, Fahrenheit.
Well, that's great, man. This has been a really fun show today. And yes, what do we got coming up?
So we had to do a little shuffling because it's summertime and everybody has to travel and junk like that. It's all good. So coming up next week, Rob Morton is going to be here to talk about his bar Voltaire, and he's got a new bar that he wants to talk about that he just signed the lease on that's down in the Carolinas. So we'll talk about that while he's here too. He said it's, I think, 6,500 square feet. I don't even understand that number.
It's too many numbers.
That's a lot of number. Charlotte Wassey is going to come be on the show and talk to us all about all things that she does traveling the world and teaching people about drinking. Amy Zavato, who was supposed to be today, but she had to travel, so we switched with Freddie. So Amy Zavato is taking your slot on the 22nd. And then it's summertime. I don't know. We got some things coming up. Karen Newman with her new book, Nightcap. Chris Hanna and Nick Dietrich are coming up from New Orleans, and they're going to do a guest shift or pop-up or takeover, whatever you want to call it, over at Blue Quarter. And for their newest bar, they've already got Manolito that was open. I hope you got to go there while we were in New Orleans, did you?
Yeah.
Adorable bar.
Yep.
Now they're opening another bar called Jewel. Hannah is leaving Arnaud's. He's been there for 14 years.
I know. It's crazy.
So he's leaving Arnaud's to go work with Nick on this new place. So they're going to come do a pop-up at Blue Quarter and then be on the show. It's going to be amazing.
Heck yeah.
That's what I got.
I'm going to miss the show on the 22nd. I'll be down at Camp Runamuck.
Son of a bitch.
But this weekend, I'll be down in Washington, D.C. for...
Our nation's capital.
Our nation's capital. There is the big... You know, the Gin Rickey is like...
Uh-huh.
That's the drink of D.C.
It is.
I don't know how that started, but that's what the drink is.
Which is the gimlet with lime juice and no sugar.
Exactly.
And then a little soda.
And some bubbles. Right?
Yep.
Are you gonna be hanging out with Derek Brown? Isn't he like sort of like the spearhead of that?
Yeah, I'm gonna get. Yeah, I'm hanging out down there with a bunch of people. You know, all the DC folks. It's at the Jack Rose on Sunday. early afternoon. I think it starts at noon or something like that. Crazy early. Stupid.
Crazy early. Noon.
They wanted to start it at 9, but then they wanted, you know, to wait for people to get out of church. So it's sponsored by the DC Craft Bartenders Guild at Jack Rose. So if you're in DC or going to be there, please come and hang out at it. And
you going down? Is this Brooklyn Gin?
Well, I'll be. I mean, I work for Brooklyn Gin.
I know.
I will be definitely hanging out, popping around to visit some accounts. Definitely hanging out, Deck Brown. Going to pop around to all the DC spots, man.
Rad.
Yeah.
Take a Zoom.
I will.
You should.
Yeah. Grab some audio and should be cool. Anyway, that's all I got for now.
I guess it's the first, so we're past our fun drive. Matt, do you know if we reached our goal? Good answer.
No.
Good answer. You don't know or no?
No, I don't know. I know nothing. I know nothing.
Well, if you don't know, now you know. I'll read the thing again anyway. Our annual summer fun drive ended yesterday, but we were trying to raise $25,000 before July 31st. I don't know if we met the goal or not. We were out of town. Either way, you can always donate to Heritage Radio Network at heritageradionetwork.org. Click on the beating heart to donate. There's options for you to donate to specific shows. There's also an option that'll just take a small donation from you monthly, as low as $5. And then you get some cool perks, and you help support our show and other shows just like us. So do that, and I don't know, enjoy the rest of your day.
Heck yeah. And also, please do reach out to us on Speakeasy Podcast, which is our Instagram, Speakeasy Radio, which is our Twitter. Hit us up with any questions, or if you want to swing by the studio and hang out while we record, you're more than welcome to do so.
Man, we'd love that.
Until next week, y'all. Cheers.
Cheers, team.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Thanks for listening to Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.